now to help save lives. It only takes about an hour of your time, and it can save up to 3 people. So make an appointment to donate at your local blood center and donate often.
Yes, good advice. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey, what's up?
Well, all kinds of things are up, I guess. It's been a busy, crazy, interesting week. We lived through 100-degree temperature over the weekend. That was fun.
Yes. The heat wave, it came. We experienced it. We endured. It was a special kind of suffering, the real kind of summer, the one the one we all are growing to love and accept.
No, not really. I don't grow to love it ever.
Do you know there is a heat advisory right now? There's also an air quality index advisory. Not just
until 9 p.m.
Yeah. And globally, like, I was looking at air indexes all over the world. They're having issues with this, the confluence of pollution or heat or just ozone or whatever it is. It's all coming out right now.
And there's
a
sandstorm that's enveloping all of Mars. So there's that, too.
I actually didn't catch up on that, but we were supposed to be updating on Mars weather. But I'm,
you gotta watch the Mars channel.
That's plausible. No.
But why isn't there a Mars channel? I mean, seriously, there's enough news coming out of Mars where there could be a Mars. You know what? Why don't we start the Mars channel now? And when they get to the point of actually doing it, we'll have the rights.
They are already looking into broadband.
Just register Mars. Was it MarsChannel.com? MarsChannel.com on the internet.
Just tell them to ask the internet.
I swear, some of these people have not left the studio in a decade. All right,
they're moving so slowly. I can see them.
We'll have to do this ourselves. Never mind.
We'll put it on the list.
They're writing things down. That'd be good. You know, everything related to Mars. Now, right now, it's just basically probes and things like that. But eventually, it will be insurrection and revolt and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, and having cell service and all of those amenities are going to be crucial.
Cell towers. Why the hell aren't they building cell towers now?
They are.
Oh, they are. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad they're on top of that.
Yeah, orbiting broadband and all of those things are important.
Yeah, Sprint, listen to this. This is how you could get back on top.
Do you realize T-Mobile and Sprint are merging?
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying Sprint should, you know, they've lost this planet. They can maybe get the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the competitive market, I think, it's going to have to expand and be...
no competition yet.
Right. You know, if you're not a major player, get out the game.
Uh-huh.
You know, start a new game on another planet.
Exactly. AT&T, you go to Venus, all right? See how that works out. But right now, we're looking to Mars. Anyway, okay, you know what? Let's get back to this planet, because that's the one we're on right now.
That was a trip. Wow, we really went off.
I'm
with you. No, I'm here. I'm on the planet. There is a lot. But yeah, slow TV. Slow TV could...
slow TV.
Could really expand into this sort of interplanetary market. Lots of people want to watch that. We've been watching lots of things.
I like slow TV. Now, what we mean by slow TV is just basically seeing things that are... might take time to unfold. There's an osprey nest out east that you can just watch on YouTube, various live streams. If you want to watch an osprey in their nest with eggs and things like that, just have that on in the background. It's very relaxing. We have a train crossing in the Netherlands, which is really cool because all kinds of different trains go by there. It's a crossing, and you get to see people riding their bicycles. And, you know, it's dark here, but the sun's rising over there. All kinds of cool things, and it's very relaxing. You have Kitten Academy. You can watch the kittens growing up, sometimes even being born, playing around, running around the room like crazy. All sorts of things you can watch.
Yeah. And sometimes you can add some of these channels and devices and get them all working together. One thing that I added today was the ability to access live stream stuff.
Oh, wow.
Because that's you know, when something's being covered, you can't always see it. We've used Reuters TV, which is also on one of these media devices.
We use Roku, right?
Well, but it's one. There's others. You can build your own. But the media devices themselves can interact and use sort of third-party apps for different platforms. Livestream's one of them. Reuters also does like live feeds and stuff like that. But it's basically coverage with no commercials. It's easier for reporters to do, and some of the networks will actually, because it's so low cost, actually just basically have a live feed going on the scene. We did this watching coverage from North Korea during the Great Summit.
Of
North Korea and the U.S. meeting in Singapore.
We also did it for, you're right, though, about North Korea, because at the border, when South Korea and North Korea were having their summit, we were watching it then, too. And basically, you just have a view of maybe a highway or an entrance or something, and it might be completely quiet for like 2 hours. There's nobody talking. You just see people milling around. But that's the feed. Like you said, that's the feed they use.
So,
and you can get to see it without the annoying commentary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so yesterday, one of the things I was watching is this rescue that's going on.
Oh, the Thai kids.
The soccer players and
their
coach. Oh,
what a pickle they got themselves into. For the record, the soccer team, this young soccer team, for some reason, decided to go into a cave about 9 days ago. They got really deep into this cave and were not heard from. A bunch of kids and their coach. And yesterday, miraculously, they found them. They're all alive. They're all okay, but they're still in the cave. And it's really, really hard to get them out of the cave. They're talking about maybe months they have to stay in there before the waters recede.
Yeah, and this actually reminds me of a show we did in Toronto when we were watching coverage of the Chilean miners. We were in a bar, and we were watching them be excavated, which I'll come back to just in recounting this thing that's unfolding right now. Essentially, none of the networks were covering this, and I was skimming around. I saw it cut in on Euronews, which we watch occasionally, but it wasn't being kept on because there's uncertainty. There's not a conclusive concept of like when they're actually going to be excavated from this cave.
Well, Euronews is great because what they do is they have something called no comment. It's kind of like what we're talking about with Slow TV and Reuters TV. So occasionally they'll just show something without commentators, and sometimes it's live. So they would just be breaking in the Thai rescue. They'd show something, and without somebody explaining what it is you're seeing.
Yeah, and I mean that. It sort of helps, but and I think a lot of people are commentating on it. I know there's memes in Thailand going around, and there's a lot of prayer and local sort of spiritual stuff going on just because it's such a interesting story. I mean, just so strange, and people, the fact that they were found and that they're okay, it just makes it that much more compelling. And I'm sure jokes and all that. I would love to make all sorts of inappropriate jokes, but at their expense. I mean, they're really half mile or a full mile into this mountain. I mean, it's not that funny. They really are exposed and remote, and they're very, very stuck because it is flooded.
Right.
And anyway, it's
monsoon season.
Yeah, it's. It's not that funny when you really look at what's going on there.
I don't see a whole lot of laughing about it, but it is it's an odd situation for sure. What I wonder these guys have been down there all this time. Has it been completely dark the whole time for them? Do they have any source of light whatsoever? Just that alone.
No, I think they would have whatever they brought with them, but that's essentially it. And so I caught the breaking stories coming in, but there was no real coverage. There's just... if passing mention and they were rescued, and then a little bit of this video from Facebook, but I wanted to see some of the media coverage that's on site, you know, because this is a ongoing crisis, you know, rescue and all of that. So I did find a live stream that I think USA Today was publishing, and it was like USA Today rebroadcasting something on live stream that was being pushed by the AP.
How does USA Today somehow get the credit for that?
I have no idea, but credit to them, because it was the only like live continuous stream that was just basically, and as I said, a very low cost, you know, a camera just sitting there. But you got to see all the kind of logistics and people that are working there. Sometimes the press would come through with someone, you know, that is checking up on things, like the head of the military or whomever is sort of the liaison there. It's fascinating. It is harrowing and just really a predicament. As you said, they don't know if originally they were suggesting a couple months, maybe what they have to do to wait for the water to lower.
Uh-huh.
But I think they're erring to something more immediate. The other two options being discussed, one is training the players to dive and basically follow rescue divers out the way they actually came upon them.
Uh-huh.
Initially, the problem with that is a lot of them actually don't know how to swim, so they would have to be taught how to swim dive.
Hold on, the kids don't know how to swim?
Apparently, I haven't confirmed this, but
and they expect them to know how to scuba dive.
Apparently, yeah. So that is part of
wow
the debate with that discussion. And I'm not a diver myself. I'm familiar. I have friends that are involved in this, and I do know that there's a fair amount of equipment and skill and calculations and planning that is required when you're doing any kind of diving.
Yeah, and that's in clear water. This would be like mud.
This would be darkness. This would be following some kind of route that has been placed. If a victim, one of the individuals being rescued was to drop their regulator and not be able to get oxygen, or if they panic at any point during that, it can become very dangerous very quickly. So that's another. The third thing that is being mentioned that I've seen in the coverage of this particular story was drilling straight down and basically pulling them out with a capsule, similar to what we saw in Chile.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't they do that?
I'm not sure exactly how far along that is and what their what the evaluation is, and if there's been any press coverage since. I'm unaware. I just checked when we were watching earlier today.
If we're taking votes, that's the one I vote for, where you just drill down and lift everybody up. You know?
The distinction with that one is it took a couple weeks, if you remember, in Chile, so they would still be in there needing food to be shuttled in. They'd run the risk of any kind of weather and further flooding, forcing them into higher locations. God forbid they ran out of higher locations. So, as I said, it is... it's a strange situation, but
well, then we can say the
serious.
The month's solution is not being considered then, because all those things you mentioned would certainly apply if you were down there for months.
Absolutely, yeah. That would be, those other options would be much sooner, at varying intervals. Teaching them to dive, probably something that you could do if that's the way they go, assuming they have Thai instructors.
How do you teach somebody in the middle of a cave how to dive? I don't know how to teach my how to dive, you know, up here on Earth, but down there where, you know, you've been away from everything for 9 days already, you're probably traumatized and you don't know how to swim. That's a challenge right there. Just teaching somebody how to you know, do anything at that point would be a challenge.
This goes back to what I said about panicking. Teaching young people to do this and the skill involved. If swimming is a challenge as a base, adding the darkness and other aspects of this rescue could indeed make that very challenging. As I said, they probably want to use Thai instructors and get them comfortable actually swimming and really assess it. But I think it could be done faster. It's just, the willingness. I will say, and again, I'm not trying to be funny, they were looking for adventure. And I will tell you, If
is that what they were doing?
The response is any indication, they will have the very best diving instructors possible and swim coaches, because the two individuals that found them were expert divers. I believe one was a British diver and the other was an Australian rescue diver. So this effort has been really coordinated and interesting just from the logistical level.
At some point, though, don't think the coach who was with them isn't going to get a stern lecture about obeying the signs that say don't proceed into the cave any further. It's monsoon season. What are you doing? You know, basically they ignored those signs and kept going.
Well, I think actually one of the stories I saw, he's already facing some charges as a result.
So he might opt to stay in there.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to get invited to the World Cup. The kids, maybe.
That's what I thought was going to happen. As soon as they found these kids, oh, yeah, definitely, they're going to get tickets to the final, which is in 2 weeks. But I didn't know they were going to be in there for 2 weeks or months or longer. Wow.
If they can hustle this, I think that would be a side benefit. But now I think just getting the logistics of removing them from inside this cave in a period of a week or two, that in and of itself is still currently an ongoing problem they're assessing.
So I take it you've never been trapped in a cave, because that certainly would have come up by now. I know I've never been trapped in a cave, but
I don't want to discuss my personal life.
Well, no, I just want to know if you've been trapped in anything, you know, that, you know, if that you could sort of relate to this.
Relationships?
No, not, oh my God, no. Let's just stick with the physical world.
Oh, I thought this was like personal.
No.
Okay.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
By choice?
I'll tell you mine, all right?
Okay.
When I was a kid, I got locked in the bathroom, all right, in Queens. Twice, actually, it happened. My mother had to call the cops to get me out. We had a lousy lock on that door. But it happened twice. I think only once the cops were involved. But yeah, can you imagine that? That's something. And just being in a bathroom, you know, I've basically been told by friends of mine who have gone to prison, imagine what it's like to be locked in a bathroom for like, you know, a week, which is what solitary confinement is like. I kind of knew, but I didn't know, you know, to that extent. But as far as actually being trapped in a place you can't get out of, that's the closest I think I can get to.
I'm trying to think. I'm pretty claustrophobic. I would not be too keen on being in a darkened, damp environment like what they're enduring now. I guess I've been locked in vehicles. There's a particular car I'm not going to mention, but if it was locked from the outside, you could not physically pull the locks up from the inside.
I hate that.
And I think I was a teenager, so I probably deserved to be locked in the car.
No, you didn't.
But anyway, I can't think of any other sort of... I don't know. My situational awareness is pretty good, so I tend to look for exits and so on.
Anytime you're on an airplane, you're kind of like trapped because you certainly can't get out.
Yeah, yeah. We've probably been on some trains that were pretty cramped.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I've done all right though. I haven't been in any kind of natural enclosure. I have a definite aversion though to being trapped like that. That would be difficult to bear.
Yeah. I'm sure many of our listeners have similar stories, but something like this. Have you been in a cave? I've been in a cave, and too good about that because I was wondering like where exactly am I?
Yeah, it's incredibly disorienting. I've been to parts of the Grand Canyon where there are some natural overhangs and rock structures like that. Maybe a little bit in the Northwest, but I can't remember anything distinct. But there's, you know, I've definitely explored places like this, and I can relate with the interest and so on.
Yeah. Well, I won't be going into any caves anytime soon. Not by choice.
Well, and there's so much going on, I'd hate to come out and have people say, what, have you been in a cave? And have to say, well, actually, yeah.
Well, I hope this works out because, and it's really captured the attention of the world for sure. And if it's going to keep going on for a while, I can only imagine what it'll be like when they get out.
I'm so impressed the response, and they needed the expertise, and it's cool to see people that are experts in these different areas really go to work and make a difference in a situation like this where you need. Some calming leadership and the right kind of coordination. Three rescuers actually got electrocuted.
Okay, I used to think electrocuted meant killed, but it doesn't.
No.
Okay, so they basically got a big electric shock.
Yeah, basically they're running pumps and lighting into this cave, and I think three of the rescuers were electrocuted.
Wow.
I think that was today. So, but they were taken away to the hospital. So it's there's definitely many people involved, and they're really working hard. Even
hospital MRI. I had an MRI once. That was claustrophobic.
Oh man.
Okay. Yeah. That was. There you go.
Those things are scary.
They really are. Because they tell you don't move, or we have to start all over again, and you don't want to move. But you know, you kind of when I had that done, it was University Hospital, and they asked me if I wanted to listen to something, and I picked WUSB, and I was listening to WUSB while I was in that damn thing.
You also have to be really careful about metal things around those.
Yeah, that's true too. That is very true.
Like they have chairs can like fly across the room and like attach to those if they're not far enough away.
If you go into space, I imagine that's pretty claustrophobic as well. So you really have to. These kids are good candidates for being astronauts now.
Yeah, yeah. I think definitely the Thai space. Administration should talk to them about this.
Well, any space administration can probably take them on. But, you know, if the soccer thing doesn't work out, this is an option.
Yeah, it depends on if they're picked up by a club space administration.
Well, okay, so that's one thing that happened, which was pretty cool.
It was fascinating.
It was interesting. And, of course, the World Cup is still going on and moving into the quarterfinal stage. It's amazing to see that unfolding. And to see some of the upsets, wow. Some really amazing things happening. Croatia is moving through.
Great storylines.
Yeah, yeah, really. Some heartbreaks. Too bad, Ronaldo. Maybe next time. Oh, that's right. You'll be too old, so I guess you'll never win the World Cup.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that's one thing that you don't have.
Nope.
Guy's got it. I feel sorry for Messi. I do, because there's something about the way he carries himself which makes me think he's human. Mm. But Ronaldo, no, I don't get that.
No. Yeah, he's a strong personality. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Of course, the United States, we got out nice and early. In fact, we never got in, so we were spared all the heartache. So there's that. Hey, we saw a film the other day. That was kind of interesting. We're going through early film history, and our latest stop was 1915. And we saw this film that I've always wanted to see, and we finally got to sit down and sit through all 3 hours of it. It's called The Birth of a Nation by D.W. Griffith. And wow. You know, I've been told a lot of things about this film, about how racist it is and historic as far as setting the ground for future films and things like that. It's divided into two parts. The first part is the Civil War. And you know, we saw that. We saw how it was portrayed. Basically, there's a family from the North that meets a family from the South. You know, they basically interact. They visit each other. They fall in love with each other. There's all this stuff going on. So you get this feeling that, okay, that's nice. You know, here are these people. And then war starts between the two halves of the country.
Once they're established.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it seemed a little stilted. You know, they were ignoring a lot of things. There was, you know, ridiculous blackface on some of the actors to portray black people. They had real black people too, but for some reason they mixed it, and it really looked bizarre and crazy, and by today's standards, completely offensive. But you know, we got through that, and you know, it was all right. You know, it was okay. It was a presentation, not something that I would ever, sign off on. But well, it was you know, a presentation of something that had happened fairly recently in the eyes of people that simply don't have a clue as to how things actually are by today's standards. I mean, there's no other way I can say it, really.
Yeah, it did not age well, and I would just add that it's this. If you ever want to look at an example of the portrayal of slaves as being jolly or otherwise enjoying their servitude, this has great examples of that. They have jolly, you know, slaves, and of course the plantation owners, you know, casually interacting and you know, showing their privilege of, oh, let's, you know, go and see how the slaves have fun, and they all sort of perform for the plantation owners.
Dancing around, eating watermelon, it's all there.
The power hierarchies, the critiques of that in terms of race and where we are, that is all there for you to evaluate and see how it was at the time.
But that was part one. So then part two started, Reconstruction. And then that's when the film took a turn into full-on racism. My God. I do recommend everybody see this film, just so you know something about our history. So you know that people who are talking today about racism and about, you know, how there's white privilege and things like that, you can see, you can recognize things that were happening back then and happening to a degree that you would never believe. But basically, the way it was portrayed simply was staggering. After Reconstruction, if you were to believe this particular bit of history, the South, what was it, the helpless white minority is basically how people in the South were referred to, were overridden by black mobs and armies and savages that raped their women and took over their government and prevented them from voting. There's a scene where there's an election, and you see black people stuffing the ballot and preventing white people from voting. This never happened. This never happened. But all these things were portrayed in this way that was so insanely exaggerated and just demeaning to people. Okay, so basically they portrayed black people as being newly elected in government, black members of the South Carolina legislature. And how did that go? Well, they show them at their desks, displaying all kinds of inappropriate behavior, taking off their shoes, putting their feet up on their desk, drinking liquor, eating fried chicken up and down the aisle, things like that. You know, these are the portrayals that we hear about secondhand, but look at it here firsthand in a pivotal film. This was actually seen as the first great film because it's, like I said, 3 hours long. Films really weren't that long before then. D.W. Griffith was an amazing director. He really was. But wow, what an incredible racist he was as well, because you just look at how this was portrayed and you see that he might have set some milestones for filmmaking, but he also set some pretty severe parameters for social justice and how people are looked at. I'm still kind of speechless by it.
Yeah, I would add that the framing of the victim, the Confederate or the South, mm-hmm. the victimhood of the whites, the quote white minority, that was extreme in this film. Like, just if you watch it, it is a complete framing, and that's why these exaggerations are thrown in there to exemplify the accusation. It's not necessarily real, but you can see the cultural allure to support a narrative for the South as a victim. It is incredibly exaggerated in this film, and that's partly why that imagery is critiqued, but also a huge parallel to what we see now,
yes.
which is Trump voters and this current red administration as a victim from China, as a victim from immigrants. And you realize this has been going on for 100 years. Like, this is not at all an old stance. In fact, they find power and comfort in being the victim, mm-hmm. even though they're not.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a parallel. And if you can look at this and see how insanely ridiculous that portrayal is, you know, with the hindsight of history to look back upon, maybe you can look at today and say, wow, they're doing the same thing. They're exaggerating things. They're saying mistruths to get people on their side to make this false portrayal of history and what's going on presently, just so that they can gain power.
Yeah, this is like one of many, I would say, one of many original sins in the genesis right. of the Confederacy and white supremacy in the U.S.
One really incredible thing that happened in this film was the portrayal of the Klan. And just to give you a sense as to the power of the medium, Birth of a Nation is widely credited with being responsible for the resurgence of the Klan later that year. The Klan had existed in the 1800s.
But they weren't getting media, right?
No, they weren't getting media, and I think they had different outfits, too. They had kind of like pointy things on top of their heads, and it was a little bit different.
But this medium is rich. It shows, it's visual. You have horses with costumes.
And the Klan are the good guys. They're the ones that come riding in to rescue the poor white people that are being hurt by the black people.
Disaffected.
And if you believe that garbage, you see the Klan as the saviors.
The hero.
It's I'm going to read a little bit from the summation of the film here. Inspired, and this is how the Klan, according to this film, was made. It could be true. Who knows? Inspired by observing white children pretending to be ghosts in order to scare black children, Ben, one of the main characters, fights back by forming the Ku Klux Klan. As a result, Elsie, out of loyalty to her father, you don't need to know any of these people. It's a soap opera. Don't worry about that. Elsie, out of loyalty to her father, breaks off her relationship with Ben. Later, Flora goes off alone into the woods to fetch water and is followed by Gus, who is a freedman, that's a freed slave, and soldier, who is now a captain. But, of course, he's a black guy, so he's not capable of understanding any of that. And he's basically a savage, and she is basically chased by him. He confronts her, tells her that he desires to get married, because that's what black people did. They followed people into the mountains and forest and basically tried to get as many white women as possible. So she flees into the forest, pursued by Gus. Trapped on a precipice, Flora warns Gus she will jump if he comes any closer. because jumping to your death is preferable to being caught by a black man in that world. So she does just that. She leaps to her death. Ben sees her jump. Actually, that's not true. Ben finds her body. He doesn't see her jump, but whatever. It doesn't matter. He holds her as she dies, then carries her body back to the Cameron home. And in response, the Klan hunts down Gus, tries him, finds him guilty, and lynches him, and then dumps his body on the porch of the lieutenant governor, who's a mulatto man, who is another savage, who is basically chasing white women and doing all kinds of horrible things. Now, what's interesting about this is that when this film was shown in 1915, that was seen as a heroic act. Today, you see the Klan lynching somebody and dumping the body onto a porch. It's a horrible thing. It's something that you would say, my God, these people are terrible. But then, the way it was portrayed, it was seen as an act of heroism and justice. When, in fact, it was all made up. Nothing like this happened in the first place. Okay, so you have this congressman named Stoneman from Washington, D.C., or somewhere in the north, and he's basically the person imposing Reconstruction on the South and putting all these black people in positions of power and things like that. And keep in mind, they're all Republicans, too. They're all seen as Republicans. The racist ones are the Democrats, so I won't even get into that because that's just, you know, that'll take an hour just to go through all that and try to get unconfused. But basically, Congressman Stoneman leaves South Carolina to avoid being connected with Lieutenant Governor Lynch's crackdown. Yes, his name is Lynch. That's the mulatto guy. LC, learning of Dr. Cameron's arrest, goes to Lynch to plead for his release. And Lynch, who had been lusting after LC, tries to force her to marry him, which causes her to faint because women always fainted whenever anything happened. Stoneman returns, causing Elsie to be placed in another room by Lynch. And when Lynch tells Stoneman that he wants to marry a white woman, Stoneman, being, you know, the Reconstructionist from the North, is happy. Finally, you know, black people are going to be integrated into society. But then he finds out it's his own daughter that he wants to marry. And suddenly sanity prevails. And he's like, oh, my God, that can't happen. So that's when the Klan comes marching in to save everybody. It's, you know, I've simplified it. I've shortened it incredibly. But again, the film is certainly worth seeing just so you get a sense as to where we were then, where we've come since then, and where people are trying to bring us back to.
Yeah, and there are, as we said, strong parallels. It's instructive, and you can see where the narrative is coming from and how this works in changing the framing of reality and how it is in effect a backlash in a lot of ways. As predicted, we're seeing examples of it, as we've talked about some of these social, you know, marches and responses, but this has been educational. Yeah, it was a fascinating film, and as you said, very, very long.
Yeah, extremely long. And
but we're seeing.
It's so educational to you know, it's easy to say, oh, I will never watch something like this, or it should be banned. But you're basically doing yourself a giant disservice by not confronting head on what actually happened, what actually was released. This film was protested by the NAACP. Yes, they had some clout then. They were formed in the early 1900s, and they had clout in the 1915 was when this came out. But they were not able to get it banned. They did have protests. Some protests even turned into riots. But there were many places that showed the film, and it was well received by audiences. In fact, the next film that was as successful as Birth of a Nation was Titanic.
Really?
Yeah. And then the one with the blue people. What was that? With,
Avatar.
Avatar, yeah. So that's the big three in our country.
I'm really glad we did this, and I'm gonna admit some ignorance here, but I associated this movie with something completely different. I didn't know the story. I was familiar, again, with, like, this is my own ignorance. I was familiar with the name of the movie, but I associated it with, like, Metropolis or some Charlie Chaplin film. I did not realize this film was as problematic, that it had anything to do with the Civil War. But that's my own ignorance. It's just I only knew it in a sort of colloquial sense. It was familiar, but I'd never actually studied it. And I think I'm better for it now. If somebody references it, I'm going to say, okay, yeah, I know exactly what's in that film. And it's important because, it was known to me as a cultural phenomenon, but now I can say I really know it and where it fits and why people discuss it or have banned it in the past, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't think banning is the answer. Confronting certainly is the answer. And you know, basically educating people as to what actually took place based on history and why something like this was made in the first place. Now, I mentioned there was reaction against it, strong reaction against it. And if you look, you know, a lot of religious leaders, rabbis preachers, condemned it, which is massive. That's important. A lot of people who were interested in social justice condemned it as well. But those criticisms fell on deaf ears. D.W. Griffith and the author of the original book basically dismissed African-American protest against Birth of a Nation, saying, and listen to this, saying the reason black men disliked the film was because they wanted to have sex with white women, and the film depicted basically that kind of thing as an evil. And Griffith wrote that his film was an influence against the intermarriage of blacks and whites. Sound familiar? You know, all the same-sex marriage opponents saying horrible things would happen if people were allowed to do this kind of thing. Same ignorance, different cast of characters, but basically the same thing. They called the NAACP the Negro Intermarriage Society. Yeah, and said it was against the Birth of a Nation for one reason only, because it opposes the marriage of blacks to whites. And that was basically their thing, because they were worried about that. There was a part of the film. It was a silent film, so you know there were cards where you would see.
It was scored. I mean, there was music.
There was music, and that's another thing about this film is that it came with a score. Basically,
Dixie over and over again,
yeah.
Like 10, 20 times.
You were basically, if you were showing this in a theater, you were told what to actually play in the background at what particular time. But there was one card. Intertitle is what they call these things. The former enemies of North and South are united again in defense of their Aryan birthright. That literally is what it said on the screen, okay, in an American film in 1950. And keep in mind what happened about, 20 years later overseas. It's all related, you know? What we're seeing happening in Europe now, the anti-migrant, anti-African viewpoints, same thing here.
Aryan birthright.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, ugly history, but essential to confront history and to see these things. And that's true of any place on Earth, whether it's United States, whether it's Europe. You can't erase it. You called yourself ignorant before, Kyle, and I don't think that's right. I think you're filtered. I think we're all filtered.
Yeah.
We don't see everything because it's too painful to look back at. But there are people who live in our world that have no choice, because they live it every day. The remnants of that still affect them. And the fact that that's even possible is something that we need to focus on a lot. So I'm glad we saw this. And I look forward to seeing more horrible things like this. We have another D.W. Griffith film coming up in 1916. His reaction to the reaction against this film.
Yeah, you mentioned there's a second one, and I think we're getting ready to...
It's even longer. It's 3.5 hours.
Yes, we're going to have to put a little buffer. We need a little break from the...
It's called Intolerance, and I thought it was an answer to racism, but no, it's an answer to those people who condemned his film because they are intolerant of his view. And it's the same basic... reaction that you hear from the alt-right now. It's like, well, you know, it's a free country. I can be racist. I can, the Klan can march down the street. Yeah, you're intolerant. You're intolerant to our people. It's the same distorted argument that was used back then. And it's just, it's frightening to see that one of the great directors of all time subscribe to this. But it's certainly true. Nobody is immune from hatred. Nobody is immune from ignorance. And, you can't just erase them from the past. You have to show everybody what happened here and explain why this is bad and prevent it from happening again.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes me think of the NRA, you know, like, oh, yeah, that's speech, too. I'm writing with bullets, you know. It's like, graffiti is writing, too, but it's not allowed in certain areas, okay?
Yeah.
You know, not all speech applies. and if it's reprehensible, it is it's already in a different category. Let's just leave it leave it right there. Good discussion. Lots going on.
Yeah, totally.
I wish we had more time.
Well, we have a little bit of time. Maybe 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Is that enough to take a phone call or two? Or?
We can take phone calls. Sure, why not? What's our phone number? 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. People have opinions on various things. I want to talk about upcoming elections because people have been talking about this a lot. And as far as, you know, how helpless they feel, nothing's going to change. And I think, you know, what happened last week is that we saw that that's not necessarily true. There were primaries, and people ran. People won that you would not expect to run or win.
You're talking about New York 14.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of amazing stories of people that were not politicians before that are now, and that have, you know, a sense as to what their view of justice is and what is fair and what is not fair. And then you have, you know, the people who have been in government forever, who think they can just hold on to it forever, and they're kind of getting a rude awakening. And that's all because of individual people. So I think, you know, if you believe that you have no power, I think you're wrong. I think this is where we learn that we do. When Trump was first elected, I remember, you know, it was a horrible time. It was very depressing. But one of the things, one of the messages that I received and that I tried to share with as many people is that oftentimes reaction is stronger than action. So, you know, if you push somebody away from where they're supposed to be, they're going to come back at you a lot harder than they would have if you hadn't pushed them in the first place. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing.
No, it's true. It's building, I think, and people really are paying attention. And that was the exciting thing about some of these different races and districts and so on. The enthusiasm is there, and where they fit in to the political forecast is fascinating. You know, I think Democrats are taking note and paying a lot more attention, as they should be, given the position they're in. We didn't even get to mention it, but of course, Justice Kennedy stepping down.
Oh, yeah.
Also a monumental deal.
Okay, yeah. You know, can I just say a thing about that? Yeah, it is a monumental deal. I'm not saying it's not, all right? And I just think there's a little too much doomsaying in the media about how this is going to set the country back for decades and decades, and Roe versus Wade is going to die. Okay, here's the thing. Kennedy was a swing vote. He wasn't a liberal. He was more conservative, I think, than liberal. But yeah, granted, if he's gone, it's very possible that there'll be enough votes to overturn Roe versus Wade. But the case still has to be heard. It's got to get to them in the first place. And keep in mind, all these people are old, okay? Any one of them could either drop dead or resign. It could happen. And it could be a liberal. It could be there are so many other things that could happen. If we get two more people resigning who are liberal, yeah, then we're in a really bad shape. But it could also happen with two more conservatives. And if Congress changes in November, where they don't have the votes they need to confirm a Supreme Court justice, well, then that's not going to happen. So, yeah, it's bad. It's something to be very cautious about, but it's not game over.
Yeah, and I'm just coming back around to what you were saying. I'm really just saying have heart. Those of us out there wanting to get involved, there are ample opportunities. And I know people are redoubling and they're paying very close attention. They understand that these sort of seemingly fringe races, they fit into the grand scheme, and the political climate is still something that's an open field, and there's possibility abound.
Now, if we can just speak to the local audience for a moment, those are the people in Suffolk County listening to us right now, hopefully, or listening to us on the archive. This is something that I found on this online publication called Patch, basically talking about the local political scene. Do you remember the last time a sitting Long Island congressman invited a far-right Hungarian fugitive with personal and family ties to neo-Nazi figures and political groups to headline a campaign kickoff fundraiser? No? Well, if you bring $100 to the Smithtown Elks Lodge at 6 p.m. and this was a couple of days ago. You can say that you remember the last time our representative invited a Nazi link speaker to his fundraiser, because that's exactly what's going down at tonight's campaign rally for Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin. Zeldin's campaign kickoff featured Representative Chris Gibson, former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, and ex-White House Deputy Assistant to the President and Breitbart editor Sebastian Gorka. We've seen that guy on Fox more times than we can count. And he says personification of evil. Well, there's so many personifications of evil in that administration, but boy, this guy really gave me the willies. Basically, he was wanted in Hungary on weapons charges back in 2016. He's a noted Islamophobe. He's alleged to have lied about aspects of his service to the British Army, otherwise known as Stolen Valor. His mother worked as a translator for a disgraced British historian who was ruled to be a Holocaust denier. His father, a far-right Hungarian political organization founded by an anti-Semite, was once under the direction of the Nazi government, according to the U.S. State Department. Sebastian Gorka himself wore his father's Vitezi Rend medal at Donald Trump's presidential inauguration and was confirmed as a member of the organization by three Vitezi Rend officials. I'm not really sure who that is, but it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, they sound like an evil, evil organization.
Condemned by the World Jewish Congress and Anne Frank Center for Mutual Respect. And if you're condemned by them, that's a pretty serious condemnation, I think. Fraudulent foreign policy guru. Supported the creation of a neo-fascist paramilitary guard by the far-right Hungarian political party. Was forced out of the White House, along with Steve Bannon, by White House Chief of Staff John Kelly. We can go on about him. But the fact is, this person was right here, locally, Smithtown, endorsing our current representative, Lee Zeldin, who, by the way, stands right next to Donald Trump. So if you want to vote against Donald Trump, this is the closest you can get. This guy has an 85.9% rating. That's how often he votes in line with Trump's position. And if you think about all the positions that Trump has taken over the last couple of years, that is really pretty close to being a clone of Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's no line to be proud of.
Not at all. There's no indication that any of this is going to change. I've been looking over a lot of his positions, and he won't even meet with constituents that he represents. He will not meet with will not have town halls, will not confront any of these issues. And you know, even if I agree with somebody, that's something that you can't be proud of. So imagine, you know, there are races like this going on all over the country. This is the one that's here. And this district has been Democrat before, and they can be again. It can be flipped. One district. Might not seem like much, but you add that up with all the other districts in the country, and you could see a monumental change. That's the power that you do have. So the thing is to confront all these issues, no matter where you happen to be, and see where your local people stand. To look at how much they are in line with the Trump administration, and if it's something that high, then you know you have a chance to vote on the Trump administration this year. You don't have to wait another 2 years.
Yeah, if you're frustrated with the process, realize that the process is all around you,
all the time, all the time. You know, there was a protest outside his office.
Really?
Yeah. This happened. Was it? He's from Shirley. I'm not sure if that's where the office is. No, actually, it was in Patchogue. Okay. He's an office in Patchogue as well. Over 100 Long Islanders honored fathers in an unconventional way on Father's Day. From sunrise to sunset, they held a vigil in Patchogue against the separation of immigrant children from their parents at the U.S. border. And participants filled the sidewalk outside the district office of Representative Lee Zeldin, writing messages on the ground with chalk, such as "Remember the children" and "Where is the love?" And from sunrise to sunset, they held a... they repeated this line for some reason. Today is a day when children spend time with their families. Families come together. Fathers are with their children.
Interesting. So it's sounds like a fun family event. They're trying to get everyone to be involved.
So yeah, people can spread information like that and learn. Thing is, you know, he will say things. It's probably somebody, you know, we'd find a pleasant personality, as many people are. He will say things such as, yeah, I don't think kids should be separated from their parents. Okay, yeah, wow, okay, well, what an enlightened approach to have.
We're getting somewhere.
We are getting somewhere. But will you condemn Donald Trump for what he is doing? No, he won't do that. He will never do that. And that's what you have to watch out for. You know, the people who support the policy in action, if not in words, people who will not step up when they have the power to do something about it. He has the power. He has the power to stand up, have a press conference, and say, Donald Trump, you are wrong. And as one of his lackeys, one of the people that is always with Donald Trump, that would mean something. Of course, it probably would mean Donald Trump would lash right back out at him. But, you know, that's the price you pay for taking a stand. But at least I would respect that. You know, that would be something worthy of admiration.
Yeah, critical thinking and evidence of critical thinking and questioning the charismatic leader.
There is no evidence of that with Lee Zeldin. No evidence whatsoever. And prove me wrong if that comes out. I'd love to hear evidence to the contrary. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. But until I see such evidence, Lee Zeldin equals Donald Trump locally. There is just no other way to look at that. And this is a district. This district, by the way, includes the entire campus of the State University at Stony Brook. Yes, it does. It includes all kinds of enlightened areas. A lot of people who think they have no power, they do. We can change this. We can change the direction we are going one step at a time. And wherever you happen to be, wherever you are listening to us in the United States, look at your district. See how the people representing you, allegedly representing you, are actually doing that. See how they are either lining up against Trump or lining up with Trump or against Trump, and act accordingly. And help out, too. It's really, really important not just to show up on Election Day, but to help get others to do that as well, and just to basically enlighten people. And have the conversation. Do not shy away from it. Don't be afraid of this.
Yeah, and challenging the messages. I think that's important. Part of campaigning is signage and getting people's names, name familiarity out there. And also just looking at cultural things. There's a lot of bumper stickers. There's a lot of counter narratives. And that stuff needs to be spoken and confront and be part of the confrontation. And the discourse that we so dearly need.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, we're out of time. Finn's coming up next. But boy, this song sure applies to the times of today, where basically you have all kinds of people falling into lockstep and repeating the mistakes of the past. And hopefully we'll learn those lessons and be a little better for it. We'll see you next week. Good night.
long and long.